Archery Podcast. Interviews, tips, and techniques from the world of field, 3D, and target archery. Hit the X with the Barebow Archery Podcast.
Welcome to the Barebow Archery Podcast. I'm your host, Glenn Pringle. This week on the show, it's all about coaching. So, hi, Christina. Welcome to the Barebow Archery Podcast. How are you?
Hi, Glenn. I'm very well. Thank you very much for inviting me. It was an honor, and I'm looking forward to speaking to you about important things in life.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, very important. Very important. So, Christina is a coach in the UK, and she's based in London, and she's also a contributor to Bow International magazine, and she writes articles on coaching and form and kind of technique and tips like that. She offers one-to-one online coaching through her company, Third Eye Archery. And because it's kind of based on the internet and she does the online stuff, she's able to reach out to people who wouldn't ordinarily be able to get online, get coaching, because geographically they live too far away or they live in a different time zone. Maybe barebow archery or traditional archery, that kind of thing, isn't popular in their country and there aren't many coaches. So it's perfect for that kind of thing. And a lot of people aren't able to see a coach in person because of those reasons and because of lockdowns, coronavirus, pandemics, that kind of thing. It seems kind of perfect to be doing something about online coaching. And I believe you do face-to-face coaching as well, is that correct?
Oh, absolutely, yes, I do. Well, maybe I'll introduce myself a little bit. I started shooting barebow, which is very important for your podcast. Yes.
Yeah,
so I started shooting in London as a result of my wanting to get a hobby that will make me go away from people so I can be with myself. But sadly, that didn't happen. I ended up making more friends than I hoped for. In 2016, a club in London opened. Its name is Archery Fit. It's a dedicated center for coaching and shooting for archers of all levels. It's open 7 days a week, so for me it was perfect. I started shooting there, became a loyal customer, and then I was invited to get trained up as a coach. And that's how I also got introduced to the teachings of Coach Kim, Hyun Tak, obviously. As for other development for myself, I mean, I generally decided that competitions weren't my thing. I really was pretty much straight away interested in coaching. I don't know why, it just happened so. It just spoke to me, so I decided to continue developing in coaching and shooting simultaneously. So for me, archery is more like a martial art, so I continue to develop myself as an archer for the rest of my life, as I call it. Yeah? Then I saw a wonderful video of a traditional Korean archer shooting over a pond, and that was my dream, to go there to that range and shoot the Korean bow. So traditional Korean bow, 145 meters. So I went and bought myself a couple of traditional bows, different styles, one Turkish, one Korean. I taught myself thumb draw indoors and then went to Korea eventually, once I saved up a bit of money, went to my dream range, shot at 145 meters for the first time. I was very happy and never looked back since. So for me, my main discipline of shooting is traditional Korean, of course. But I do teach and enjoy every discipline under the sun.
Oh, that's cool.
That's
really cool.
Basically, the direction of shooting.
You say you were kind of drawn to be a coach. I mean, what is it about being a coach that drew you to it, and why do you enjoy it so much?
Very good question. I've been thinking that myself as well. I'm not sure. It probably comes from me learning too many things all the time. Yes, I do. I do have a tendency to learn a lot of things and read about things and spend most of my time learning. And I always want to share what I learn with people, regardless of the discipline that I am learning about. So I think that the whole purpose of learning is to share. So maybe I think this is the main motivation for me as to why I became a coach and want to continue to be a coach. You learn, you share.
Yeah, and when you were, you say you went over to Korea. I mean, obviously that's kind of a big, it's a big financial investment and a kind of investment in your time. What made you, other than shooting across this pond with your kind of traditional Korean bow?
Yeah.
I mean, that, what else did you learn there? What other things did you do?
Ooh, another reason was that I wanted to meet Coach Kim, of course, because everybody wants to meet Coach Kim. I think everybody I've met wants to meet Coach Kim. So I also went to his school as a bare bow archer. And by that time, he said that he only coached about 4 bare bow archers in his school.
Okay.
In Gyeongsang. And I was probably the fifth time lucky. Yes, and yes, I was shooting there. And at that time, I also had target panic, but only with a bare bow. So I asked him to help me get rid of my target panic and to show me some exercises I can use in my personal shooting to get rid of this ailment. But it's very funny that I was on it with a bare bow. And the reason why it was happening to me with a bare bow is because of a competition, which I did. In the middle of the competition, my arrow rest broke, but I haven't noticed it. And I wasn't sure as to why I'm hitting left, right, and center, although my technique seems the same. So that was a bit of a, I don't know why, just sort of a, in my mind, it was a bit of a traumatic, inexplicable experience. So that kind of caused me to have this trigger where I couldn't hold my anchor point. I just like, I come to anchor point and I just release, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, for me, it was very important to fix that. And I just thought Coach Kim is probably going to be the best person to help me. He did help me, cured my target panic in, how many seconds was it? We laughed. It was 45 seconds or something. It's very funny. So ever since I made the right choice of a coach, for sure, I'm very happy I've done that. And ever since then, I've been sharing this wonderful, these wonderful exercises with other archers who are on the verge of target panic or severe target panic or any hesitation on the release or anything like this. So yeah. And again, I mean, I usually, when I travel for the reasons of archery and for the reasons of self-betterment. I don't do like beach holidays or anything like this. So
me neither.
I make them useful. So yes, it was great, yes.
So you said archery for you is a martial art. Just explain a little bit more about that, mm-hmm. because some people do kind of regard archery as a martial art. It is kind of practiced mm-hmm. in a certain type of archery is practiced in places like Japan as an art form, a kind of living meditation.
Absolutely.
So just explain a little bit about that before we go into a bit more of the kind
okay.
of technicality of coaching.
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, the meaning of martial art is, again, it's important part of meditation, and it's also a lifelong process of self-betterment. And I think, as you mentioned, Japanese archer, Kyudo, is one of those disciplines, but also Korean traditional archer, KTA, is another one of those types of archery. It's also meditative, and it's also counted as a martial art because you've got your body and your mind and your weapon. And plus, you've got 145 meters distance, which is a very good challenge for archers to kind of undertake, yes?
Yeah,
I think it takes on average about 20 odd years of consistent shooting to reach master dan, which is dan 5. And then there are 4 more after that. So
I think I've got a bit.
It is for me, I have my eyes on that. I really want to do that. And I just feel that it just speaks to me naturally.
I've definitely got a few more years to wait before I get there.
Yes.
For definite. So, where else did you were training down at training people, training yourself, and then eventually mm-hmm. training people down at Archery Fit. Was that like very formal, and did that make you want to kind of go and progress as a coach?
That definitely is the case. I mean, I don't know, since day one, when I started working there, I just understood that this particular area, this particular sport, out of all the other sports I've ever done, it provides so many different angles for the archer and for the teacher. There are so many different things. There's no room for you to get bored. Literally, if you grow out of one discipline of shooting, if you get bored with one, you switch to another and still be within the sport. Or if you want to do competitions, you can do competitions. If you don't want to do them, don't have to do them. There's so many 3D and everything else. You could just, you know, go on and on about different variations, subtypes you can go for, or you can do it for yourself or for others, or just hang out with your friends or be more serious, you know. So I don't know, for me, it's one of those sports that has everything in it.
Can you kind of explain what is coaching and the kind of coaching that you do, and what are the benefits of being coached and having a coach to look at you, look at your shot?
That's a very, very interesting question. Very simple, but very, very difficult. Yeah. Okay. So coaching. So for example, I usually, when I have this conversation with somebody else, I'm going to say, oh, so what is the difference between the teacher, the lecturer, the professor, and the coach? The difference is that, for example, when you talk about sports coaching, a coach is a person who's responsible for your development in terms of technique, a person who gives you feedback and does analysis of your performance. A person instructs you on the technical side of the sport, but also is your mentor, a person who deals with your motivational and emotional side. Yes, so basically gives you support on various levels in your life. Yes, plus physical, so mastery. Yes, so your coach is your master. He masters you in three different disciplines, develops your body, your mind, and your technique. Yeah. And unlike the teacher, there are different teachers and they teach on different things, but usually teachers are responsible for giving you information and giving you feedback. In coaching as well, what is very important, I think, these days, compared to traditional styles of coaching, traditional styles of coaching is where, of course, your coach tells you what to do and you go do it no matter what. Yes. But these days, the most, effective way of coaching is by having feedback from both sides. So it's based on communication and building a relationship with the person. So if I tell you what to do, you tell me, okay, you don't just sit there and do it. We have a conversation. I say, I think we need to do this in this way. And you reply to me, ask me questions, and we figure out the ways of doing things. You know, basically it's all about communication and feedback going from one side to another, as opposed to a traditional understanding of it, you know? And and I think a lot of coaches in general are sort of seen as people who are available to be there 24/7, which is great. Yes, I don't mind doing that as well. But yeah. All in all, it's a very, very multifaceted area. You have to. I think you can also like a good inspirational person. You have actually a good inspirational teacher. You have to be kind of born a little bit like of a coach. You have to love doing this sort of stuff. You know, you have to be genuinely caring about other people. Want to care about their development, you know.
Are they? Yeah. I'm just interested in what are the qualities of a coach. What kind of things, you know, attributes does a coach need to possess? I mean, is that caring and being, you know, having?
It's one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them. I think most important qualities a coach has to develop is, of course, mental resilience, patience, never-ending curiosity about things, humbleness, self-motivation. It's because I think these are the qualities that the coach needs to teach their students as well. And these are the qualities that will make a person more self-sufficient. Because I think also, which is quite healthy approach to coaching in general, is that coach must be available at all times, but at the same time, you have to teach your student to be independent. Because if something arises and they have to deal with the situation during competition by themselves, when you're there, they have to be able to do that without you having to tell them what to do.
Yeah, yeah, I can see how
that's
important.
Makes sense.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, definitely.
So, it boosts person's confidence as well. So you can motivate people in this way by appearing strong, confident, knowledgeable, and confident in your knowledge. You create a certain aura about you, and people listen to you and like you, respect you, and they come to you with their problems. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't work that way. Or as Coach Kim said, the most important thing in a coach is how they look. They have to look clean and they have to smell good. Of course, he was joking a little bit, but in general, he said that, of course, a coach must not only be a strong person, he has to also look good. Because then your trainees and your students will also want to look good and represent you. Yeah.
Yeah,
that sounds, I still thought it quite funny.
Yeah, it sounds it's logical, but you know, it's kind of like it's the kind of thing that the little details that people might miss.
It's to do with self-respect.
Yeah,
if you respect yourself, and you will brush off on other people, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope all that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, of course it does. Yeah, it does indeed. You know, and it gives an insight into the level of kind of care and attention that for someone to be a coach, that's the kind of, they're the kind of details that you need. That's the kind of attributes that someone probably needs. You know, they've got to care about your development as well as what they're getting out of it. They've got to teach somebody, but also teach them kind of, like you said, self-sufficiency. Because like you say, you can't actually be there 24/7. And if they're on the line in a competition and they're having a problem, they need to have the self-confidence and the
mental resilience.
Yeah, to kind of say, I've got a kind of toolbox of like things that might solve this problem, and then take a decision for themselves without turning around and going, what should I do to somebody else outside of them. So yeah, I can see how, you know, that, you know, if you've got an archer that doesn't have the kind of they're led like a donkey to that, they're told do this, do that, and then they kind of unquestioningly do it, and then when you get to a point where there's a problem, they don't have an answer. They are always turning around and looking back to the coach for a solution.
Important to like to equip archers or people again in general. I all of the qualities I've listed, they are all to do with life skills. You have to have those life skills in life and in sport. Sport is life, life is sport. So all of these qualities will be good, which also brings me to a point to where I often hear from archers who are just recreational archers, for example. They come to me and say, "Well, I don't need to deal with this mental game stuff. Like, I don't really need it." I'm like, "Do you in life want to be happy, comfortable, less irritable, more in control, better at making decisions? Of course you do. So you do want the same here, you know?"
Yeah.
And very, very often I hear this, very often, which I think is one of the common issues, I think, amongst all the archers who are just shooting recreationally. You know, they for some reason think that they don't need to worry about their mental development so very often. Again, just my observation. I'm not saying everyone does it, but yes.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. So if these will be the guys who will come to you and say, "Oh, you know what, those guys on the line, the shooting line, they're speaking too loud, or the music is too loud." But no,
you must be able
to zone it out, you know, to enjoy your process.
Yeah.
That's why mental game is important. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny you should say that. I mean, over the last 12 podcasts, we've done podcasts about technique, various different techniques. We've done podcasts with people who are kind of at the elite level. We've done podcasts with bowyers, equipment manufacturers. And we've done three, maybe four podcasts on motivation, the mental game, keeping kind of mental focus, target panic, and the kind of the mental process involved in that. The most popular podcasts are ones about equipment. And I kind of think, this is just my opinion, it's not, you know, it's just my opinion as the host of this podcast, that the reason that the
podcast... Would you mind if I mention something, now that you mentioned equipment?
Yes.
It's a very painful theme, speaking of which, I think especially recently, and specifically barebow archers, have gone into this phase of never-ending bow tuning. Have you noticed that?
Yes. Well, that's what I was coming to. There's this thing
perfect. I'm reading your mind.
So. Yeah, exactly. There's this thing of equipment and tuning equipment that's going to solve all of my problems. It's not the fact that I'm a basket case on the line, and that if the guy next to me squeaks, I fall apart, and then I'm looking round, and then, like you were saying, people's bows are too noisy. The coffee machine in the cafe next door is disturbing me. The lights are too bright. The lights are too dim. It's too hot. It's too cold. And I'm like, really? You're thinking that if you spend another hour tuning your arrows, that's going to sort all those problems. But like I say, in terms of the popularity of the podcasts, the ones that deal with technique, a kind of middle, the ones where it's the elite archers and equipment and how to tune equipment, they're right at the top. But the mental game ones, other than the ones with Joel Turner, the mental game ones are like, they're just classed as not important at all. And I try and feed people this. I send them links. I'll say, I'll post this on Facebook. Have you seen this about like the mental game? Have you seen this offer on a course about like how to kind of improve your mental consistency in a shot? I get nothing. I get no feedback. If I posted, look at this brand new riser, and it's got all these like flashing lights on it, and there's a little kind of pocket knife comes out as well, and you can open cans with it. You know, it's a bottle opener. I would get like 500 likes. So, you know, there is a thing of, you know, using equipment and especially kind of micro tuning to try and solve problems that
where do you personally think that is? I'm gonna ask you a question now.
Yeah, that's, people are asking me questions. Why? I think it's easier to fix something outside of yourself than it is to fix yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easy to get the credit card out. And
instant pleasures.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and like an instant kind of reward. And it's, you also your brain is also society's so consumer orientated. So we're kind of conditioned and we get a hit of dopamine when we make a purchase, when we anticipate a purchase, when that kind of box comes and the delivery driver, you know, we can see the box on the tracking app, you know, as it's coming to our house. And we know at some point today, it's 15 minutes away, you get another dopamine hit. And then the box comes and you open it and it's a shiny new thing, another dopamine hit. There's so much. Yeah, there's so much kind of built into that. And then what people find is that what I see, especially online, is this bow will get promoted by the various kind of influencers that are around, or a particular type of rest, a new set of limbs, that you've got to have this button plunger, these arrows, and you're thinking, last week you were telling me about a completely different set of arrows that were the best arrows in the world. But anyway,
As you mentioned, but in general, product development, of course, must be encouraged, and it's a good thing.
Yeah,
but
obviously, yeah, yeah. But
the way people can approach things, they must be more analytical about how they go about the subjects, I think.
Yeah.
But again, something that it can be taught, it can be learned for sure, but it's just a quick fix, a magic pill. Everybody likes that sort of, you know.
Yeah, a quick fix. And then you'll see them posters, my scores have gone up by like 10 points. This is great. And then like a month down the line, when the novelty is worn off, because your brain, their scores have gone down again, and then they're looking for the next piece of equipment. I suppose it keeps people in jobs, but it's not a fix. It's not a fix for, you know, kind of having.
It's not a long-term thing.
No,
sure.
No, it's like a short-term thing that, and if that's what you want to do, if that's how you want to, you know, if you like buying equipment, and that's up to you. That's your thing, then. Fair play, you know, not for me to judge you. It's not the way that I kind of, in my opinion, that, you know, it's not the kind of long-term improvement that you're gonna be hoping for.
But you see, you're very kind and you wish long-term improvement on them, but they may not want it, right?
Yeah,
so I guess you make your own decisions, right? But at the same time, I understand your pain because you feel for your human archer friend, you know.
Yeah,
same for me.
Yeah, the whole thing of the podcast, the whole ethos is to kind of put the information out there, and hopefully somebody will maybe listen to it and maybe kind of act upon it and then improve.
I'm sure some will.
Yeah, all I can do is, it's like a shop window. I can put all of my products in the shop window at a very cheap price of free on the internet, and then if people pass by and they decide that they're only interested in the shop, the products are in the shop next door, that's up to them. That's all I can do. Mm-hmm. My aim is for hopefully somebody will you know, improve. So hence we've got you here.
Yeah. Ah, thank you. Yes, here I am. Yeah, but you're doing a very good job, actually, I have to say.
Right, thank you.
I enjoy the medium of a podcast, actually. It's very good. You can do things while you listen to things. You can do your push-ups while you listen to podcasts, you know. So that's how I approach things,
Yeah, podcasts keep me company on my kind of 3 and 4 hour commutes when I'm going to a job, so... keeps me sane. Otherwise, I would have to listen to the radio. Heaven forbid I have to do that. Songs from like 20, 30 years ago that I've never wanted to hear again. In terms of the coaching, I mean, we were discussing about like, you know, this online thing of like micro tuning and buying gear. I mean, I see a lot of coaching systems on Facebook groups, on forums and stuff, and I see a lot of people giving coaching advice when I'm sure, like just last week, they were posting what arrows I've only just taken up the sport and what arrows do I need, and I see a lot of that kind of people giving out advice, and you know, it's like a never-ending, you know, conveyor belt of people saying, oh, you should do this, you should do that, and it's usually to someone that they don't know and that they've never met and they've never saw them shoot. They don't know what their equipment is and they don't know what their kind of physical limitations are. So in terms of what you do in terms of your coaching online, I mean, having systems is all, for me, is all like well and good, but do they take into account that everyone is different? And, you know, there's this thing of having a textbook form, but it's great if you've got a textbook body and you've got textbook movements. So when you take up coaching, because obviously they come to you for coaching, they obviously want coaching. Mm-hmm. They've obviously, they've made that decision that maybe...
Commitment.
Just, yeah, a commitment. Yeah, yeah. And they've made a decision that buying a new release or a new set of arrows isn't going to give them the improvements that they've decided, look, I need to look into improving myself internally. You know, it's not an external fix. It's an internal kind of commitment to improve self-improvement, like you said. So how do you as a coach work with them, especially with your online coaching now because of the pandemic? It's difficult to meet people and coach them one-on-one because everything's got to be socially distanced and all that kind of stuff. And there's all the kind of risk assessments around that. So can you just explain what the kind of process is that you employ at Third Eye Archery?
Okay. Yeah, so very good question, which I like as well. Yeah, so first of all, my project and the way I made it, it was a process. I've been doing it for way before the pandemic. So I've been working on it for about 15 months. So, and it was my idea that I wanted to find a system or find something to help intermediate archers. Yes, because, I mean, there is nothing for them apart from lessons, say at Archery Fit or a couple of other places where you can get lessons. And that's it. There isn't anything that tackles the long-term development. You can come for one-off lesson, or you can come for a course of lessons, that's fine. But intermediate archers, they require individual attention. It's very important because this is literally where you get to the next level. Yes, so you get your challenges, you get the understanding of what you want to do. And again, I was working on this project without the pandemic, so it's been in my mind just for, you know, for the also, especially those who are positioned remotely, those who could not get any coaching. These are the other people that I was thinking about. Yeah. So for me, my program is very different to other things because it actually is a structured program, and it also offers further development for the next 3 months. Yes, so I stick with a person for 4 weeks. This is a chunk of time that I dedicate to the person where we give each other feedback and do all the tests and everything else. And then I give them a 3 months training plan after this so they can implement everything, all the findings we've had during the program. Yes, 3 months because it's a good chunk for intermediate archers to actually get along with their new habits. Yeah,
yeah.
So imagine, Glenn, you wrote to me, you signed up for the program. We agree on our feedback days, usually a weekly basis. So I send you off a package of information, including the athlete's questionnaire, which I have composed together with my sister. My sister is a neuroscientist and neuropsychologist, which I've been benefiting from her knowledge in my coaching and life for the past 11 years now. So yes, I made this very simple athlete's questionnaire where I get to know to the archer before I even meet them, which is perfect. So you fill in your questionnaire, all the you answer all the questions, I get that information, and also along with that I get your videos. Yes, I have come up with instructions and everything is sent to you, so you know exactly what to do. You send me five videos that I require from you. So I analyze your technique and I analyze your profile. In the first feedback, after a week, I get I give you your first feedback offline. Yes, the reason why I give the first feedback offline, not online, is because I test and see how the person responds to my tasks first, see which modes of learning are better for them. Second week is online feedback. Again, you send me more videos, and this is when we meet online for like an hour or so. Yes, and this is when we discuss how you got along with everything else. How did you find this and this and this? So it is an ongoing process and a continuous feedback here and there, go back and back.
Yes.
So, and I haven't seen anything like this, and I came up with the program myself. I think if I were the student, this is how I would like to be taught. Yes.
Yeah.
Because there is continuity, there is communication. I tackle both technical aspect, and we always focus on one thing at a time, which is very important. It's a very analytical approach to teaching, focusing at step-by-step development on technique, and depending on your personal development, which I already know because you told me, we implement physical development, physical exercises. Or again, level is different to every person, so I give you your personal information for you, exercises that will suit you. And the third thing, of course, is mental. Yes, mental is very, yes, I have so many different exercises I can give to people, but every student will have their own thing. Say some people are less fit and they will also have more load on the physical development. Some people need more fixing here and there. So it's really a very individual case. And for that, you need time, of course. Yes,
yeah,
so four
yeah.
weeks is a very good chunk of time. And then for the 3 months, I write up a plan for you. And during those 3 months, you will have a very, very detailed training plan specifically for you to fit your load, your lifestyle, and everything that your soul may desire for further development, of course. Yes?
Yeah.
As I say, be water, my friend. Martial art approach. Yes?
Yeah, yeah. So when you kind of, so you're working on all levels, that you're making sure that they're kind of fit in their body, that they're fit in their mind, and that they've got the right technique.
Absolutely. I try to do my best, of course, in a given time. But, of course, I also listen to people. Yes. If there's a person who doesn't want to do particular things, I'm not going to force them to do the things. I will find another way that they can do those things without them knowing it.
Yeah.
Which is why my psychological background comes into it. Yes, I'm not a psychologist but myself. But, again, my sister has been very, very useful and very helpful for most of my life in this sense. So I can use all these little tricks and techniques, you know. But for the betterment of the people, of course. It's nothing invasive. It's just purely based on cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
Modification.
Just going kind of into that, I mean, the kind of archery shot is reputedly a very simple process. You learn how to shoot the middle of the target and then you just repeat it.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why people find it so hard. And that includes me. That includes me as well.
Mm. Well, this is when they start thinking about bow tuning. That's why it gets off now. But in general, I think a lot of people just get too bored.
Yeah.
And then they create them problems in their head. No, actually, it happens very often. I'm very, very happy that you said the word simple. I think the biggest problem, and again, I call it not an issue, but a problem, is in the way people see words like simple, basic, beginner, you know, the way people see these words. You know, when you tell them, oh, Korean technique is very simple. And it's like, what? Are you joking? I'm like, well, simple is not a pejorative term, or it's not a negative word. Simple means natural. That's pretty much what I think is meant by word simple, you know?
Yeah.
Simple, natural motion. And again, it becomes more difficult when you start to give yourself challenges. It becomes more difficult when you don't give yourself enough challenges. Yeah, you get either too bored or you actually jump way over your head, you know? It depends on the person. But again, as word simple is, I'm happy that you mentioned it, yes? And I think Korean technique is simple. Yeah? Simple, meaning natural, of course. Yes?
Yeah.
But people do get problems for various reasons, you know?
Yeah. And in terms of form, why is form important, and why is having a repeatable form and a solid foundation important? I mean, like I said, like just going back to my, all you need to do is learn how to shoot a 10, and then step two is just repeat that. So why, what is the form that you need to learn and then repeat? And why do you need that kind of solid foundation?
So the importance of repeatable form and solid foundation. That's what, I'm just repeating your words. So it is important. I think it is also coming back to the things I've mentioned earlier. Imagine you teach somebody good, simple, linear technique. They know it. They understand it. They learn how to feel it. They are familiar with the feeling. They know when they haven't done it. The most important thing is that once you know what you need to do, once you teach your body to feel what it needs to be doing, you are then able and capable of enjoying the process of shooting because you know you've done well, you have a sense of achievement, and then you're also able to correct yourself if you're not. So you can be self-sufficient more or less. So you can have a coach and you can practice without a coach because you know what you need to be doing. But in order to get that sense, you need to be coached.
Yeah. I understand.
Yeah, so there's like a process, but again, it's important, of course, and I'm not even mentioning the injuries because, of course, proper form, proper warm-ups, cool-downs and everything, and proper structure in your training, it will, of course, decrease the injuries.
Yeah, yeah.
Or in injury cases, you know.
What kind of injuries do people – I see a lot of kind of shoulder injuries. People say, oh, you know, I've had a rotator cuff tear, I'm out for like 3 months, etc. But there was a strange one that I saw yesterday where there was either an under or an over rotation of the bow arm elbow, and it meant that the archer's ligaments had stretched in their arm around the elbow joint, giving them really nasty, really nasty kind of injury. And anything kind of, I remember when I had damage to my feet and all the ligaments got damaged, and it was kind of like I was thinking to myself, I'd really rather all the bones have been broken, because you stick it in a cast, you don't move for 6 weeks or 8 weeks, and then it's kind of back to normal. Whereas with the ligaments, it took maybe like 2 years to get back to, and not even back to where it was, a limited range of motion. So, yeah, I mean, it's stuff like that, you know, a ligament damage in the elbow as well as a shoulder damage, that kind of says that you need you need that kind of form.
The most common injuries, of course, are in the shoulder, and it's to do with the fact that people, first of all, have a bit too much tension as a result of being overbought. A lot of people are overbought. They literally use bows that are too powerful for them.
Archery kind of encompasses people from the ages of like 8 all the way up to 80 plus. And people's bodies at those kind of times of their life are in completely different stages. You know, ones are developing and the other ones kind of...
The ones have never developed, so that can also happen.
Yeah, you know, people's bodies, as they're getting older, start to kind of, bits of them start to break down and fall off and what have you, suddenly stop working, as I found out recently. I'm not going to go on to my woes of archery injuries. I've done that now. If you're coaching someone, you kind of need to take all of that into account, don't you? And the kind of the way that...
Oh, definitely. You ask it in the first place. Even before you're acting, of course. There are some that don't tell you anything, but you can see that, okay, something is up. You haven't told me something. But yeah, as you also mentioned, the elbow injury. I recently worked with one of my students. He's a bareboat archer. He is double jointed. And obviously you see an archer quite a lot, but you have to be very careful with joints. So I gave him some special exercises for strengthening the joint and so he doesn't overturn too much.
Yeah,
it's another one of the tricky ones. Yeah. But shoulders are the most common ones because people either don't draw enough and then as a result they hold too much on the shoulder and then literally with repetitive motion the tissue just breaks down, or they just literally using the bow that's too powerful for them too quickly. And I'm sure it's a problem around the world with being overbought.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something I see. Yeah, I mean, I've not been doing archery very long. I'm still a mere beginner in the eyes of quite a lot of people. in terms of, you know, people who've been doing it.
And you shouldn't feel bad about it.
No, I don't. I'm still learning. So I'm a beginner. I'm still in the beginner phase.
We're all learning. Always all learning. So it's good. Yeah.
But as even as someone who's kind of new to the sport, I'm stood next to people in indoor competitions and the bows literally ripping their arms apart. they don't look very happy. Every shot seems to be just stress and worry. It kind of always finishes a bit prematurely and they never get the result that they're hoping for.
Yeah.
But when you suggest maybe you're a little bit overbowed, instead of the kind of... Mm-hmm. And this is not by... This is them putting something on a public forum saying, what do you think my problem is? And then you say, well, I think you're overbowed. They take great offense to it, especially men, because it's almost like a mark against them that they're
insulted.
Not manly
very
enough.
Insulted.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Totally insulted.
I have to say, like, I when I coach, like, in person, people know what I look like and how short. I mean, I'm not too short. I'm 5'3". And I've got tattoos on my arms and everything. When you have got other people in the room, they come in, they're usually twice as tall as I am and they're probably bigger in frame. They come in, they say, who the hell is this? She looks like she's 15 years old. It's very funny. And then I have no problem telling them that they're overbought. I just say, sorry, using too hard of a bow.
Yeah.
And then they never get insulted. It's fine. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But again, and I think it's very important, even if they get insulted, it's very important to tell them that and to explain to them why. And how it affects. Like, if you overbowed and say, there's no problem, you can lift 50 pounds, but when you draw, it's a completely different thing because you're relying on your body frame, not your muscles.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different motion that you're not used to yet, you know? And then they understand and they don't protest, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Or if they do, you show them the skinniest person in the room or the video of the skinniest person in the room and you tell them, look at this one. How much do you think she pulls? And she'll, probably about 20 pounds. No. 38 pounds. How can she do that? Well, through training. And there you go. But again, it's just a matter of like explaining to people. And if you have enough patience, you will find the way to reach them. When you do, they will listen to you more.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a cute quote. Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry. But again, funny.
And in terms of, you know, is this kind of form business? Is this just not for like people who go to the Olympics?
No, we can all just change about the way we think about archery. Like, what is it? I mean, for most people, when I ask people, so what is your goal? I personally have never heard, apart from it actually being a joke, I've never heard anyone say, oh, I want to win the Olympics, which is actually quite funny. Yes, it's because of the speech I give to them before I speak to them. I say, archery is a martial art. This is what you can expect. We're going to have a bit of fun, then we're going to have a bit more training, we've got a bit more technique, because archery is about technique. Technique takes time to get good. Right? And then you ask people, so what, you start to speak to them more and more and ask them about their goals. For most people, they do have competition related goals, but they don't say, oh, I want to go and win the Olympics, because they understand that this is a sport that requires full-time dedication. Yes. If you can get paid for shooting, if you can make archery your job as a full-time shooter, then you can have a goal like that. Yeah. But you have to explain how realistic actually it is, you know, so to avoid those questions. But in general, I think that's, you can, and again, I think it would actually be very beneficial if more coaches spoke to students on any level and spoke to them about different types of competitions, different types of things that are happening around, different types of goals that they can assume. You know, they don't have to be full-time shooters. They can be shooting once a week, but at least there will be a purpose for people, you know. And you can either play golf or archery or any other sport. You know, there are so many different things you can do. And people do it for different reasons, really.
Yeah,
you know, but I personally like to prefer if people don't really like the whole competition scene, and if they still want to work with me, I really prefer to give them this motive and reason for shooting as a martial art, as a development, physical development, mental development, meditational practice, and they really love it. I think in my experience, nobody has ever declined that as a goal for them. So yeah, I think it's a very good outlook. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're doing something for yourself, self-care. You know,
yeah.
Part of self-care.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, there's people, if you want to go and shoot once a week, that's perfectly fine. I know people that the Friday night indoor league, their Friday night kind of shooting session was not necessarily a means to an end. That's probably a bit strong, but the archery was kind of not incidental. It was part of the whole mix, but being with friends, coming together and doing an activity, and then going afterwards to do like a social meeting. There was a kind of, there was a bar or a pub or whatever.
A pub, of course.
Yeah.
Necessary pub.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And then they would go for one drink afterwards. They'd see people that they hadn't seen for a week or maybe 2 weeks. And then, you know, that was part of their week. And it was a kind of diary event. It was something that this is what we do on a Friday night. This is what we do. We have our bow, we have our archery, but we come, we don't practice the rest of the week. We just enjoy doing this. And that's perfectly fine. But maybe those people, like you say, if anyone gets a little bit of kind of coaching so that they're more comfortable shooting and they're more confident, then they will enjoy it more.
Absolutely. And yeah, and again, it comes back to communication as well. You know, like it's very hard, especially like in UK, you understand the way archery work in UK, systems and courses and everything, but it's for coaches as well. There is a limited amount of time that they can communicate to archers because it's usually a group and it's a big group of different people with different moods coming at different times of day. And it's difficult to build rapport with people. That's why then when you shoot for a while, it is especially even more important if you stay in archery, it's important to get individual attention because this is how you actually understand things for yourself after you've tried it for a little bit, you know. Yeah. But again, there are so many things that can be done, but they need to be implemented on perhaps a larger scale, and it requires a lot of work. And it's very good to read books about archery and technique, watch videos on YouTube, but the key word is plural. Read more books, watch more videos, more people, and then have a think about what you saw and then decide for yourself what is best. Not just one person, because so many people actually, and especially recently as well, Jake Kaminsky puts out amazing a huge amount of information. I think actually he makes all of this for coaches because it's very good information there and the way he laid it out. But for archers, they come up to me all the time and ask about Jake Kaminsky and his videos. What do you think? What do you think this? And he's, but he said this, but you said that. I'm like, okay, so fantastic. I'm glad you're branching out and are educating yourself and looking at things, but let's have a think. Let's have a look, you know. Look at that other guy. Look at a video of that guy. Look at this, you know. So kind of expand, widen your horizons, and then have a think about what you saw. And, yeah, maybe then you can implement. The way I also like to also say to people always that if they do look at these things, if you do read something, try it out, but just don't stop. Yeah, because there's no right or wrong. There's some people will think that one method is better. Some people will think that the other method is better. You know, and the benefit, another benefit of actual archery coaching is that when you begin shooting, everyone's different the way they teach, but the coach will always save you time on the things that you should know, and you will get to know the things you need to know, like safety and stuff, quicker than by learning by yourself. So it's a very important part. And then they will introduce you to the basics, the skeletal system of archery. And then if you want, you can go branch out and learn if you like. I think it's another important thing to kind of mention about coaching and what it can do to archers.
So so if there's all this stuff out there and there's all these great videos, why not just learn off the videos? Why get a coach?
Again, personal choice. If you want to learn from YouTube, learn from YouTube.
Yeah.
But what you don't get individual attention. You don't get feedback.
Yeah.
You watch, like, somebody shows you, okay, that's how to do this. Okay, I'm going to go and repeat that, but how do I know if I repeat it correctly? How do I know?
Yeah.
I don't, you know. So, again, it's part of the human element of it is kind of there, but there's no communication between two parties.
Yeah.
And there's an issue, you know. If you're a lot more experienced archer, of course, by no means just go and develop yourself as much as you want by yourself. Great. Because you know what you need to know about the, you know. Sorry, my English sometimes isn't great.
That's brilliant. It's better than my Russian, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Again, it really depends, right? And again, coming back to the thing I've already mentioned, the analytical, critical thinking. Yes.
Yeah.
You look at something, you read something, you think about it, you know, and then continue. So,
yeah.
That's how I approach it anyway. So,
yeah, because I was reading something in a book and it was about kind of the approach that a particular coach took, mm-hmm. and he would say, you know, I'd be coaching this guy, and I'd say, look, you know, can we work on this part of your shot? Can we work on your release? And the guy would say to him, but I don't need to work on my release. My release is great. And he's like, so you tell me how you think your release is. So the guy kind of tells him this story of how he's got such a smooth, buttery release, and it kind of the anchor's mm-hmm. in a great place, and his fingers just open by themselves. There's no, you know, he's not thinking about it. And he said, look, yeah. I'll tell you what, let me show you a little video of you shooting. Because do you video yourself? And he's like, no. He says, let me show you a video of how you actually shoot. And they're kind of like you're saying about, so they'll go and watch, people will watch something on YouTube, and then they're thinking that they're doing yeah. exactly the same as what they see. And the reality mm-hmm. when they film themselves and then they post it on Facebook or, you know, one of the archery messenger boards, is that it very, mm-hmm. very often is nothing like what they've seen on YouTube.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
So that's where the coach kind of steps in on a bit more of a human level. Like you say, there's no feedback mm-hmm. otherwise. On a human level, they kind of say, look, let's run through this, because Jake mm-hmm. Kaminsky does these kind of things where people will send him a few examples of their shot, and then he will go through. Mm-hmm. Is that the kind of feedback that people need?
It is the type of feedback people need, but at the same time, how many people are there? So you need to find a person per person. So every archer needs to have a coach or attention, individual attention, you know?
Yeah.
Another thing you mentioned, sorry, just skipped my mind. I was just thinking about it. Going back to the conversation. Forgot now what I wanted to say. You see, my Russian thoughts are creeping into my head now.
Is that the kind of version of target panic when you speak in another language?
No. That's part of my cogitation process, I call it.
Right.
So, yeah. You mentioned about the, what was it? Sorry. You're going to cut that bit out, yes, because I'm thinking out loud now. You mentioned about the video, yes?
Yeah.
So in my questionnaire, athletes questionnaire, one of the questions I ask is, what do you think is the strongest part in your shot, and what do you think is the weakest part of your shot?
Yeah.
And these are the two questions that are the most important ones in the whole questionnaire, you know, so you can see how a person sees themselves, which is very important. And then pretty much all of the profile of the person just comes together immediately, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And you're right. And usually, so far, no one has been right about their assumptions.
Yeah.
I mean, not right, but yeah, it's very interesting, you know, just to see how they think about them.
Yeah, because the perception and the reality can be very different. So they think they're doing something, and the video doesn't lie, kind of thing.
Very often as well as sorry to interrupt.
No.
Very often, very important to again. This is I did my coaching level at Coach Kim's school. So and he very often and most important thing he emphasizes is of course the kinesthetic. Yeah. So the feeling of the shot, the feeling of things, and what you feel where when you do a particular part of the shot, which is very close to me because that's how I think as well. You know, that's the reason why I did my coaching level there, because philosophies collide, and. Very often in those videos, you don't hear explanations in terms of sensation, you know? So, for example, when you do this, how much to push? Like, how do you describe that push? Is it a push? Is it physically? What's going on there, you know? What is felt where, in which part of the body? And this is also a super important thing, and I think any good coach would work in this sense, because most people will understand quicker when you explain to them how the thing is felt, you know, any particular element. Come up with analogies, examples, some graphic examples if you need, so people can use their imagination to visualize things, you know. So yeah, and yeah, I think it's another thing that's not all, but most videos do like that aspect, which I think is very important for learning. And that's why I think also remote coaching works when you explain this in these terms. So this is the language you want to use, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll get the grips. Right?
So you mentioned once you've kind of worked with the archer on a certain, like a one step at a time, because that's, like you say, mm-hmm. that's very important. You know, You can't, mm-hmm. when you have a training session or, you know, a session where you're working on something, you can't work on three different things at once, because when you make a change and you see a difference with the shot, how do you know which mm-hmm. one of those things, you know, enacted that change? So like you say, it's a kind of one step thing.
By that, of course, one step at a time. It psychologically, it sounds very good when you tell them, oh, you're going to be working on one thing at a time. So you say highlight, release, right? So the way I work, I pre-record videos of myself explaining to the person everything about that element of the shot. Then I write up a file to each person with diagrams and everything else and photos and et cetera, personalized. And I describe exactly what happens before the release, how to make everything about the release that they need to know. In there, there's a lot more information than just one thing, basically. Yes.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For the person, when they work, they focus on just one element, right? Without even thinking too much and overthinking.
Yeah.
Which is a bit odd. But still, the person understands how the movement originates, how it should be, how it should not be. But in their head, when they practice through the drills I give to them, and by looking at my videos, when I show them how I do them, the things, and I describe how it feels, so they are able to get various dimensions, right? They can read, they can look, they can feel, they can describe, they can listen, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And they're also an imitation exercises. So yeah. It's a very intricate process, I have to say, but I'm enjoying it very much, I have to say. I really enjoy working with a person, individual, and finding the right way of communicating a certain thing, including other things around it, so they don't seem like an overwhelming process.
Yeah.
And they never do. Luckily. So yes, but it's very, very rewarding. For me, it's very rewarding, I think. And
you mentioned my Achilles heel there, overthinking.
Yes.
Yeah. That overthinking. Yeah. That's to me is worse than the dreaded target panic.
Are you overthinking during which stage?
All of it.
All of it.
Yeah, all of it. Before I get to the range, while I'm at the range, when I'm coming back from the range, all of it. So that's something I need to kind of work on. And at times, if I shoot regularly, it's something that I can kind of get into a kind of groove with. But recently, I've had an enforced break from archery, and then coming back, I found I was like back at square one almost with the kind of overthinking, analyzing. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, just shoot the shot. Just shoot the shot. It's very simple.
What do you overthink about? Do you overthink about archery itself, the technique, or do you think about something else?
It's all archery. It's not. I don't get distracted by, you know, what am I doing tomorrow?
Spots.
You know, I'm not. I don't get distracted by that. It is kind of like, it's almost like everything has to be a certain way, and you know it's not going to be a certain way because you're kind of under pressure, so it's going to feel a little bit different. But
so you have high expectations,
yes,
and self-downing at the same time.
Yeah, and it kind of, more of a like, there's a part of me that always wants to have like an overview, control mm-hmm. of what's going on. It doesn't want to accept that, you know, you've done this, you know, you've shot this shot like thousands of times and that you know how to do it. It wants to constantly take control, take command, and then it wants to shoot the shot for you, where you're like, no, this isn't going to work out.
How about if I courteously offer you a session with Third Eye?
Yeah, I could try that. Yeah,
you like that?
Yeah, I could try.
It sounds like you're my patient. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. I'm probably going to be the worst student you've ever had.
Oh, no. There's no such thing as the worst student. No, no. There's always a challenge.
Yeah.
No one's ever worse, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You're gonna have to like a challenge. And I'm saying that.
Oh, I love. Right. I love nothing more than a challenge.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. And
so would you accept?
Sorry.
Do you accept?
Yeah, oh, I accept. Yeah, you want to try and fix me. Perfect. as an archer.
Perfect.
Good luck. Good luck.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Like I need luck. Yes. Thank you very much. Yes. I'm good. That's it. I'll send you the details after this.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Cool. What kind of things can you do with coaching? What kind of issues can you solve? Can you solve that kind of overthinking issue? Can you solve something where people have like shot anticipation? Can you solve like, you know, not everyone's going to be strong in terms of.
Oh yeah.
You look at the Korean women and they're all quite small framed, and yet they have the technique to pull 40, 42, 44, 45 pounds.
Well, but a lot of them shoot 38.
Yeah, but still, because of the technique overrides the kind of brute force. Because I remember somebody, they were telling me, I can't remember who it was now, they were telling me that these two big buff, like weightlifter guys came along to do an archery session. And they were like, oh, this is easy. How heavy is that bow? And he's like, you know, just lifting it up is very light, but to pull it back, it's quite heavy. And they kind of look at the, you know, incredulous look on their face. Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, it's 45 pounds. 45 pounds, yeah, I could do that. And then he said they pulled it back two or three times and then they put it on the ground. They didn't want to know anymore.
And shaking, of course, yeah.
Because it's not kind of that big, bulky strength. That's not how you do it. What kind of problems can you solve in terms of like the technique, so that you've developed the kind of archery strength, not like kind of weightlifting strength?
Well, it's very one of my favorite questions. Yeah, but again, technique. What kind of technique? Yes, for example, when we're talking about Korean technique, is one thing. Yes, so I'm going to talk about Korean technique, of course, because I'm a proponent of that, yes?
Yeah,
so it is, as you know, of course, it's about alignment, yeah?
Yeah.
Biomechanical alignment, shoulders roll with, and anybody can be taught this, anybody can learn this, literally, you know? It's just a matter of whether you can find a place where to learn that, or a person to learn that from, you know? And again, I just don't see any obstacle or reason why people cannot learn this way of shooting and continue shooting forever and always. But I think also, in addition to what you said about success of Korean archers, it's not just in technique, it's also in the repetition, the amount of times they actually shoot, you know?
Yeah.
So it's also, as I think also, Casey Cleave mentioned that in his World Archery, what was it, seminar, 2015, I think he was talking about. Somebody asked me about Koreans and he was a little bit reluctantly answering the question, saying, Koreans, no, they just shoot a lot of arrows, something like this. You know?
Yeah,
but they do shoot a lot of arrows, and indeed, but they do shoot them in the same way. So it is about technique and about repeating it, you know. And I often really wonder, such a strength of mind that you don't get bored with it. Imagine you come to archery at the age of 3 and then you do this how many years? Yeah, so it does take a lot of mental training and all kinds of things that they do there for toughening themselves up and not to get too bored with it, because, you know, many would, you know.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, it's the same as coaches, and they get paid. Yeah, so it's a job.
Yeah.
That's another aspect of it. So I think if there was monetary incentive anywhere else in the world like this, on that massive scale, then, I mean, I'm sure there would be way more archers who would shoot and would get good, you know.
Yeah, and like you were saying, that there's coaches for beginners and there's coaches for elite level. There's a big gap, yeah. You finish your beginner's course and then maybe if your club is, you know, a fairly big club with a decent amount of coaches and they apply for all of the grants and they get, like, I don't know if it's called On Target or there's a little follow-on thing in the UK where after you finish your beginner's course you can take probably only like 4 sessions and then nobody kind of comes and because they're busy with the new beginners. And you kind of get, you know, you kind of pushed out of the nest And then it's like, fend for yourself. And if you're having problems, yeah, maybe we can help you out. But
yeah, actually, or you have to find a coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Individually. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because they get sucked into the kind of new beginners that come through. And for a lot of clubs in the UK, I don't know what it's like elsewhere in the world, but the kind of beginner courses are a kind of a financial lifeline where they can make money to support their club. Because they don't, they'd have to pay the bills. They've got rent on, you know, or a lease on a hall or a lease on a field or whatever, and then they've got all the beginner kit. So for them, it's they deal with the beginners, and then it's kind of you're left to yourself. And then if you're good enough to progress, then you have to try and find yourself a one-on-one coach. Because to make to the elite level where you'll get coached, that's great. And there'll be coaches on hand who like you say, get paid to coach top archers. But in the middle, there's also just a big gap.
Yeah, for some reason, I mean, if you compare it to other countries in UK, again, UK is more like for cycling and other sports, soccer, football.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but in general, like for some reason, I think it's just still kind of a... And my dissertation subject was on the 18th century archery society, so I'm all about archery. So yeah, I think it's stuck in a little bit in the 18th century. So it's any subject, anytime that money is mentioned, it's bad for some reason. So if it's like in America, you go and pay for a lesson, then it's bad because it's business capitalism, which is very funny to me. I think if there was more business in archery, it would be fantastic for archery. It would be amazing. Like, look at Joad in America. Look at any archery club that has a bow tech on the hand there, shooting range, outdoor range, and you pay for lessons.
Yeah.
How great is this? And there are so many archers because of that. And I think if the status of the sport changed more and archery was allowed to be more business, it would have been super, super beneficial for archery.
Just going off on a slight tangent, because you mentioned the kind of Joad and the kind of setup that they have in America, where there are a lot of pro shops with a range, with a decent range.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the kind of Lancaster archery, just Lancaster.
There are many, many, many.
But there are many, many, and, you know, they have outstanding facilities. They don't, because... One of the things that's kind of, there's a little bit of a buzz about it in the UK kind of target archery scene is that Eastern have withdrawn the ACC and the ACG from their arrow lineup. Now, the ACC, because it has an aluminium core, it's apparently it's easier to locate with a metal detector if somebody has missed the boss on a shoot, on a club night or a competition, because a lot of the structure of target archery and target archery clubs in the UK is that a lot of them rent land or lease land from a school or a football club or a multi-sports facility. So they don't own those facilities. They don't have them. They don't have the access. And there's certain rules, so they need to shoot certain types of arrows for insurance purposes. That's what we're always told. I was discussing it with a retailer today, and they were like, "Well, how do these schools know about this if it's not people from the club feeding them that information?" It's a bit of a an urban myth, really. But in terms of the facilities, a lot of the indoors facilities are, leisure centres closed because of coronavirus. So they're out of bounds. A lot of the schools don't want people who aren't either students or teachers or support staff on the premises. So that means no outdoor archery as well. And the kind of whole setup of archery is so very different to the way
kind of crumbled.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because there isn't
there's a lot of land.
Yeah, there. But like you say, because it's not a business, because it's not seen as a business, there aren't many there aren't many facilities.
Entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Who would start them off.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you agree that it would be good for UK?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For definite. For definite. Yeah.
It would be fantastic, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that in itself, because it engenders a certain level of, because it becomes a business, it engenders a certain level of professionalism. Then the pro shops would have qualified coaches on hand. You wouldn't need.
Absolutely. Yes.
You wouldn't need an archery club, which is an amateur club run by volunteers.
And would eliminate those people on Facebook. We'd actually have a bow tech in every shop. You come in, sort your bow out, show you how to do things, in addition to coaching.
Yeah.
So they would eliminate the whole group of people who are potentially in danger. Hmm?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's, like you say, there needs to be, like, it needs to become a business. It's a complete philosophical change. Mm-hmm. Where it's not a kind of, and the
it's a necessity. A necessity. If the sport needs to grow, it's definitely a necessity.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's probably a little bit boring for people who are non-UK archers, because.
Well,
maybe,
sorry, guys.
Maybe the way that things are run in their country is very, very different, and they.
But it's interesting for them to hear.
Yeah.
What it's like here, you know, limitations and everything.
I mean, in the past, somebody said to me that. It wasn't fair that when they went to represent their country at kind of international events, that they weren't fully paid and catered for like the Europeans. And I was like, really? Because the people that I know that have been on, have represented their nation in archery events, other than the ones that are taking part in the kind of Olympics, they're paying. They're paying for their own airfares. They're paying for themselves.
Yeah.
They're paying for the hotels that have been negotiated through the national body. So maybe it's not the cheapest hotel. And that someone actually said, "And we have to make a contribution towards the archery's governing body staff when they're going on these trips." So that kind of took me aback. But in terms of the way that I see that archer and the kind of the country they're in and the setup they've got, they're in a far better place to, you know, I've seen people where they go to a municipal, it's like the local council, the local government, the kind of county or state or whatever, they set out a field with a load of archery targets in, and you can just go anytime you want, as long as you've got kind of maybe some kind of personal liability insurance, but you can just go and shoot whenever you want.
Yeah.
And that's like
heaven, doesn't it?
Yeah, most people here, like, and this all ties in with the kind of coaching and the development of the sport, is that those kind of things are a pipe dream for a lot of archers here, to have a 24/7 field, a 24/7 facility.
I think we need to form a union.
Yeah. Oh, don't.
I think that's the solution to the problem.
that sounds too political for me. That sounds too political for me.
We must make it all official.
Yeah.
People will listen. Huh?
Yeah, maybe. No, well, they never listen to me.
When there's a problem, there's always a solution.
There is. But I think the pandemic has kind of brought it home, that the kind of very parlous state of kind of archery in a lot of places, where suddenly the landowner of a premises that you might use, they've just suddenly said, no, don't want you here. So that's your club shut down. That's you not going to shoot. And a lot of people have decided that they want to try and shoot at home, which I know the arguments for and against it. I'm not going to kind of get into it. But the pandemic, I kind of think, you know, maybe a lot of clubs will go under, and that will make getting into the sport harder. It'll also make finding someone just to coach you as a beginner harder. Mm. And then, you know, if there's no money in it for people to make a living out of it as an intermediate coach, because there's this huge gap.
You made me want to start a revolution now with all these words.
Oh, don't do it on my behalf, please.
I speak for the people.
Just post updates on Facebook, and I'll keep in touch. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. Definitely. Do get involved, please.
I'm
power is in numbers.
I'm going off on the. We're on an hour and a half nearly of recording, and I'm.
Okay,
I've been off on about.
But it was important.
Yeah, I've been off on about five tangents already. It's not going. It's not going to the. It's not going at all to the script. I'm sorry about that, listeners.
Fine. Improvisation.
Yes. Right. Let's just do a hard stop. And Glenn, okay. And let's go back to the script instead of just droning on for hours and hours, putting the world bang to rights. So getting back to the coaching again. So we've gone through this thing of, you know, beginners, you get coached and maybe you get a little bit of afters coaching and then you're left to your own devices. So the next step is you need to be at elite level before somebody else is going to pay somebody to coach you. And you're going to feel the benefit of that. And like you're saying about, you know, the people, the Koreans, and they've shot so many shots and they're making archery for them is a full-time thing for a lot of intermediates. This is the difficulty. Everyone kind of sees, you know, as an intermediate that, you know where you want to be. Some people have got, like, their goal is just to be better, a little bit better, a little bit happier when they shoot. They want to pull a little bit... They want a different bow with a bit more poundage and they want to shoot this kind of thing. Fair enough. Then you get people who want to be good within their club, good within their county, good within their state, good within their country. To make that progression, you know, you are an intermediate. Once you've finished the beginner's course, you are an intermediate. And making that progression without kind of coaching is probably quite difficult and it's probably quite time-consuming. And because most people will be doing archery as a hobby and not a full-time job, trying to dedicate the hours to that. So do you think having a coach makes that journey less painful in terms of maybe time and injury, maybe makes the kind of progression quicker? And, you know, do you think that they'll learn more along the way and be better when they get to... if they want to go up further levels?
I think so, yes. I would agree with your statement. But also, again, it will depend. Say, for example, if somebody came to me and said, I'm an intermediate archer, I've been shooting for 5 years, I shoot bare bow, I want to become a national champion, next indoor national champion or something. So, okay, great, that's a very good goal. Let's have a look. Let's have a look at what your life is like. How do you work? When do you work? When you actually shoot and everything else, you have to try and get to know the person first. It is highly possible to become national indoor bareboat champion, but it depends on what the person is sort of ready to give up. Yeah, and, you know, it will really depend on the person. But there's nothing that is impossible.
Yeah.
Maybe not next year, maybe in 2 years, maybe in three, maybe in four, maybe in five. But if you are able to shuffle around everything that you do and once your coach gets to know you better, because you need to have some time, right? And you're able to create a certain structure that both of you can work on, then by all means, you can become a national indoor champion in bareboat in like 2-3 years if you want, right?
Yeah.
And of course, coach will help you do that.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe there's some natural talent, one in a million, and it would just boom.
Yeah.
Had few less, continued shooting exactly the same, repeating, mentally resilient, very super strong, and then hop, a star is born, and they just win randomly in a couple of years' time. Can also happen. But again, it's one in a million chance.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 million, yeah. So again, a coach would definitely be super helpful in that, I think.
Sorry.
It's very broad subject. No. So that's the reason why I was thinking for my independent project as a program. It's this program that gives you structure so you understand, even if you never come back to me again, but you understand that this is how things work. This is how you build a structure, that how you amend, how you recover from an injury or a break and so on. So you understand for the future.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you have rational approach to practice. So that's the main goal of this program in general. But if you do want to come back again, then we can continue working, you know. So.
Yeah. Like you were saying, when you were saying about... So you've got this archer, they're intermediate and they want to become like indoor national barebow champion. And they've got like, I want to do it in the next couple of years. That was a good point about what their other commitments are. You know, if you've got a family and you've got a demanding job and you travel a lot, then that time frame might have to slip a little bit because you've got to be realistic. And like you said something about you need to look at what you want to give up. So,
absolutely. How are you going to shift things around? And also, I mean, you can say, okay, so here we have schedule for a year, approximately. Here's another version of the schedule that may happen if you happen to injure yourself and something else, or if you happen to move house or have a break here and here. Then what do? You set yourself a goal to be, first of all, top 20. Great, you've achieved it. Fantastic. So next year, you're going to go, I want to be top 15, and you become top 15, you know. So you have to show the person how you will actually get to that point, you know. It's not like just, boom, you came and won. You know, you have to make sure that it is all realistic, and you still have your long-term goal, say in 5 years you want to be a national champion, but you have to have other mini big goals every year so you're able to achieve something, so you have that sense of achievement, so you're used to it, you know. It's also very important because a lot of people, they're also not prepared for all the fame and glory when they win something. Sometimes it's the case too. So
yeah,
you have to be very sort of, step-by-step approach.
I've never seen any of this fame and glory. I must admit, I've never seen any of it. So they have to have a training plan to kind of, once you've worked with them, they need a training plan. What is a training plan and how important is it and what kind of role does it play within the kind of archer's development?
Training plan, it's structure for your training, structured approach to how you're going to work. Yes. So same as in life, you have your schedule, same in training, you have your schedule. And the variations of that can be infinite. Yeah. Depending on your technical development, depending on your physical development, your mental development, and what is a priority at the time. So if you are technically good, you found your form, so you continue practicing, we're going to shift attention more on physical development. Yeah. But we'll continue, of course, shooting in technique. Again, it's very personal, but for every person, it's very important to realize that there should be a structure in the, it can be fairly loose, but there should be a structure because otherwise you're not able to measure your progress.
Yeah.
If you just go there without any purpose, it's difficult for you to, you get bored. Yeah. It's difficult for you to measure what you do, where you stand, you know?
Yeah.
And you can do it either with a coach or without a coach, but you will be able to implement it and actually track yourself and see, okay, oh, I've done well here. Excellent. I've underachieved here. I've achieved here, you know? So you're able to give yourself feedback on you, you know?
Yeah.
Reflecting. Yeah.
So
that's one of the reasons why you should have a training plan of some sort, you know? The more professional, the better, of course.
Yeah.
I would say that.
Have you got any advice? People have probably not shot anywhere near the volume or the amount that they would normally have done by this time of the year. Maybe for some people it's been a good break, maybe. But for 2021, what kind of advice, other than signing up for one of your courses online at Third Eye Archery?
Is this your cup of tea? Yeah.
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 What advice would you give to them? You know, the winters, you know, we're not going to get a lot done in a lot of places. And I see some of the bigger archery tournaments. I've had to scale back quite a bit. You know, some of the, I'm talking kind of international level, they've either scaled back or they've been shifted to, you know, a few weeks or a few months because things are so uncertain. So one thing someone said to me today was that, you know, they had archers that come into their retail business that had just kind of lost motivation because there's no club nights, there's no social element to it, there's no competitions. What can you say to, like, you know, just in terms of...
To those guys.
Yeah, to those guys, how to keep motivated for 2021, and we've got a new season and hopefully things will be a lot better.
Yeah. So first of all, whatever happened is not your fault. So don't blame anything or anybody. It just happened.
Yeah.
Make 2021 your technique year. Yeah. So focus on your technical development. If you miss your social interaction, which I'm sure every archer does because we all have archery friends, you can always get yourself a short trainer. Get yourself on Zoom meeting with your mates, shoot with a short trainer, have a laugh, have a drink afterwards, you know. Stay in touch.
In moderation, of course.
After shooting. Trot trainer is your, yes, if you're the kind of archer who does, I mean, like myself, I don't care what distance I shoot at for technique, so for me it doesn't really matter. So shot trainer, after shot trainer, for master, whichever one you prefer, you can use it without the arrow, so you can continue focusing on your technique without having to shoot anything at anything. But if you are the kind of archer who will get bored with it, try to fight the boredom first, and then, of course, try to find a way to communicate to your archer friends. Have some archery parties over.
Yeah, sounds really good. It's pretty a very simple thing, but exactly. Yeah, it sounds really good. Yeah, excellent, brilliant. Yeah. So, Christina, just remind us again of where the listeners can find you, and you know, if you've got Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, that kind of thing, and a website, obviously. I think my website is
www.thirdeyearchery.com. You've got all information about the course there. Facebook group as well, Third Eye Archery official group is on Facebook. I'm not on Instagram or Twitter because I don't have time for it.
Yeah,
and my personal Facebook, you can add me as a friend. And Glenn, I think you should pronounce my surname because you do it very well.
I'll try. Wait,
yes, please.
You had to coach me before we came on.
Yes, please.
Christina Dolgilevich.
Oh, almost perfect. Yes, Christina Dolgilevich. Yes, you can
Dolgilevich,
find
yeah.
Yes,
that's
thank
it.
You.
Dolgilevich.
Great job.
Yeah.
Great job. Yes.
It's my first.
Yeah?
It's my first Russian lesson.
Yes. Also, a little disclaimer: await for interesting bearable-related articles in Bow International in end of February, March. It'll be very interesting. Very interesting stuff. And also, of course, don't forget to come to Archery Fit if you're in London.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please, 7 days a week. Practice if you like when we're open, of course.
I was down in London.
Yeah, there you go. I plugged everything.
Yeah, you plugged everything
in. And yes, plug everything I like. Everything I like. I don't recommend anything I don't like. So there you go.
Just in terms of, I know there's a lot of really good podcasts for Barebone now. There's so many now. I remember that literally it was just the Push podcast for a long, long time. Yeah. And the guys there do a brilliant job. And then there seems to have been 5 or 6 or 7 startup in the last 18 months or something like that. But in terms of actual learning resources, I know Martin Godio's got, I probably murdered your name there, Martin, I'm really sorry. Godio. Martin Godio. Sorry, that's probably how I should say it.
You're perfect at surnames. You like them very much.
Yeah. I should say lo siento, Martin. I've really probably mangled his name. But he came out with a book, which I think if I just turn my head and go off mic, is here behind me. The Art of String Walking for Barebow Field and 3D Archery. Uh-huh. He's got another Barebow book out. But in terms of, you know, articles in magazines and stuff, it's kind of, I think that there's not a lot of information about Barebow out there and traditional archery. Yeah. We'll definitely look forward to those articles. Yes. Would you know who might have written those articles? Would it someone you know?
I will be releasing a couple of articles.
No, that's what I'm getting at. You're going to say, I know who it is. I was feeding you the line you didn't get it.
Sometimes I'm a bit off. Also, don't forget that World Archery has their level 2 manual accessible to anyone, and there you have got some barbell. Level 1, level 2 are available, so always revisit those. It's free, doesn't cost you anything, so it's good sources. If you can go on YouTube channels, of course, in World Archer as well, the various useful videos there, apart from just World Championship videos, you can find sources there, various lectures, and look around, have a look. You have a lot of time now. Lockdown, if it starts again, so you can sit and watch something useful. As I said, you mentioned all the good stuff, right? And of course, Coach Kim's book for archery. I know people say it's expensive, but guys, you don't get this wonderful Bible in a wonderful hardback edition and slipcase for nothing. It's a lot of hard work. yeah, if you want to actually treat yourself, get yourself the Bible, I call it, Coach Kim's archery book.
Cool. Yes. Excellent.
Yes, also can be used for self-defense as well. It's very heavy. So, yeah. Awesome. So, yeah, I think I've said all I could say.
Yeah, I think
thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's
first
been great.
First experience with podcasting. Thank you.
Yeah,
hope
it's been
I
great. Yeah, it's been fantastic. We had a few technical issues at the start, but we shall
That's
overcome
fine.
That kind of thing. But yeah, it's been great having you on, Christina.
And don't forget, I'm going to assess your form for you and help you out a little.
No, videos yes. of my form is something no one needs to see at the minute.
only I will see it. It's fine.
So, yeah. Yeah, do not publish my form online. Thank you very much. No one needs to see that.
Personal, I won't. Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much for inviting me. Fantastic to talk to you. And yeah, first time lucky, I hope so.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you very much.
Hit the egg with the Bareboat Archery Podcast.
Produced and presented by Glenn Pringle for Redstone Productions Limited.